up, everybody? Welcome back to the Sorry to Interrupt podcast. It's the trifecta. All with you tonight to talk about another national championship for the UConn Huskies. Boys, how we doing?
Well, I'm good, Shawnee. How you feeling is the main question.
Congratulations.
Oh, I'm luxuriating, of course. Basking in all of it.
What a game. What a game.
What a time to be alive. UConn was one of the most dominant teams, not just college basketball teams, I've ever seen. They only lost three games this year, and they easily – I mean, what, they get blown out once, and that was it?
Yeah, Seton Hall.
The Seton Hall and Creighton games.
Who gives a
that
shit?
That was it, and their only other loss. And, Will, you can wear it as a badge of honor with your Jayhawks at Allen Fieldhouse. But
yeah, I mean, we beat the national champions. It's fine with me, but – Even Tom, he tweeted it himself. Closest game that they played was St. John's in the Big East tournament.
It was insane. I had to double verify that before, and I was like, okay, double digits. I just kept scrolling up. I was like, this is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah. So let's get into it. UConn beats Purdue 75-60. They become the first back-to-back national champion since Florida did it in 06-07. Before that, Duke did it in 91-92. Obviously, what makes this different is those teams brought back essentially their entire core, whereas UConn kind of had a new team. South Carolina on the women's side did that too. I think they lost five starters from last year's team that didn't win a national championship but got to a Final Four. They came back and went undefeated. But, boys, I mean, where do we want to start? I mean, we can talk about where this stacks up historically, but just as far as the game goes, I mean, Dan Hurley's a genius. Luke Murray's a genius. What their game plan was totally and utterly flawless from the get-go, even when Edie was just scoring at will.
Yeah, it was one of those things that you look at, and they basically said, we're going to let Edie get his, but there's no way they beat us unless Edie scores 60. Because if you look at the rest of their starters, 4 points, 12 points, 0 points, 5 points. So they shut down everybody else and let Zach Edey do his thing, knowing that, listen, we're still going to beat this team by double digits even if Edey scores 13. I mean, Edey scores 30.
You know, I got to say, I know Edey had a great game with 37 and 10, but that was not an easy 37 and 10 like it usually is for him. They made him work in the paint, and I also loved that Hurley was having his guards pick up those guards basically at the logo so that the screen and roll was raised so much higher to the point where Edie couldn't roll off to the basket to get the ball in the paint. He would have to catch it above the free throw line, and that's not where he operates very well. I just thought it was such a genius defensive plan to front those guards so high so that the screen and roll would have to start so much higher. I thought that was honestly my biggest key to the win, was that Edie wasn't able to get into the paint at ease, and he had to work for every basket.
He did, and you saw as the game progressed, particularly in the second half, I mean, he was not really much of a factor. His legs were not under him. And also, too, you know, the advantage that UConn obviously had was clinging. You know, he's not going to match him exactly, but he matched him pretty much right there from a physicality standpoint, and he didn't get into foul trouble, where you were able to spell him a little bit with Samson Johnson and let him take most of the brunt as far as the whistle goes. But that allowed UConn to deploy their strategy, which was exactly what you said, Tom. We're going to meet these guards who are tremendously undersized compared to the UConn guards up at half court and say, hey, let's see what you guys can do.
Castle's going to put you in a fucking cage.
Yeah, I mean, like, you think about it, right? Like, you had Lawyer and Jones, I mean, and Smith. Those guys are like 6 foot, 6'1", 6'2". They have to go up against Spencer, 6'4", Newton, 6'5", Castle, 6'6". Like, brutal. From a physical standpoint, they were completely outmatched. And the fact that they shot 7 threes, it wasn't even that they were cold from three, guys. They weren't even able to take
Well, they threes, never had the opportunity. Like you said, they were fronted so hard. And it was just such a perfect game plan. And it was one of those game plans where it's a lot easier said than done. You kind of saw it coming from a mile away, but the fact that they executed it so perfectly is really what stands out to me. I'm looking at it from a bigger picture, and for me, I think this is so good for college basketball. As much as we wanted to see you know, the best players win being Edie and Caitlin Clark. By far the best teams won, which I love for college basketball because both the women's and the men's game kind of mirrored each other in this one where you had the best player in college basketball against by far the best team, and the best team showed why they were.
Yeah, it's one of those things, and we talked about it, you know, at length. It was, and Tom, I just want to approach what you said about the game plan. And you saw, Sean, how many times did Tristan Newton just back down Smith and have an easy layup? Like, they could have done that every time down
the floor. Yeah, Castle did it a couple times, too.
Yeah, Castle did it, too. It's just, like, the game plan that
Curly set plays, too, to get them open baskets late. Even when they're trying to chew up the shot clock and they get down to 10 seconds, and then they run this set that gets them a wide-open layup, when they really don't even need the points, they're just trying to chew the clock down, but it's just a throwaway play. It's really unbelievable, and I mean, he needs to be coaching at the next level. I'm sorry, Sean.
And that's, you know, that's the other thing, too, is, you know, I watched the whole game. I turned it off with about 2 minutes left because I'm like, this game's over. You know, I say to Sean, what's my favorite thing when it comes to UConn, Sean, in the second half?
Flip. Fuck the switch.
That's what they did. But, like, I can't recall a game that I've watched that I didn't see many fast break points for Purdue. Just the getting back on defense for UConn was unbelievable. There was no easy buckets, even in transition. Like, Purdue had zero transition game. You know,
was,
you see the game.
I mean, let's
Purdue,
face facts, dude. It was literally Zach Edey against UConn. Like, they eliminated
everything else. Yeah, the only way that Purdue won that, it would win that game is if Edey had 60.
Well, yeah, and if every single guy over 6'4" got fouled out on UConn.
Yes. So, but yeah, I mean, if I'm Hurley, and like, obviously, you know, that Kentucky job is very, very a big thing. But if I'm Hurley, I just won back-to-back national championship at UConn. I'm favored to win the national championship next year, tied with Duke. Like, just build a dynasty.
Yeah, I think if he doesn't go to Kentucky, who will offer him, you know, I saw something as much as $11 million a year. Like,
Kentucky's now has $34 million that they didn't have before to spend.
Right. So you've got, you know, Kentucky obviously has, Hurley pretty much dismissed it last night, but obviously, what are you going to say after just winning a natty? We'll see. You know that that's going to be Kentucky's number one.
It's hard to say no to 11 mil. I'm sure he's making a good bunch at UConn.
Well, UConn is about to up their ante for sure, but, you know, we'll get back into the game in a second. But
What did Calhoun say? Not a penny?
Not a penny.
Not a penny.
But when you're looking at the comparison between UConn and Kentucky, I mean, if the resources are all there in stores, which Hurley says they have, and the facilities are amongst the best in the country, you're going to get the bag from Kentucky, but UConn's not poor. They can easily afford him.
No, the only reason why he would go to UK is for the money.
But also, too, it's like, is Kentucky a much better job at this juncture of college basketball than UConn?
Not at this current point in time.
Probably the same. I would say the same, to be honest.
I mean, Kentucky has the cachet, you know, and I don't know this, but if I were to bet, I'd say that Kentucky probably has a lot more booster money.
Yes.
And a lot more NIL
money. That's the thing.
Yeah, no, that's what I said. It's all about money, whether it's his salary or the NIL money that he gets to dish out. That's the only reason why he would leave, because, again, Kentucky's been down for so long. And I could argue that that's more of a Cal problem than anything, but we'll have to wait and see on that job. I think Dan Hurley is, unless he goes to the next level, which he might be one of those lifer college guys, I think you're going to be lucky and he's there to stay at UConn.
Yeah, back to the sets and the game plan that you were talking about. What's amazing to me watching UConn, obviously the last couple years, but even more so this year, I think, they never really have a bad shot. Like, I don't think there's really, even the shots they miss don't seem to be low percentage.
I could only look back at one bad shot, and I think it was, who's the tall white guy?
Klingon?
No, the wing.
Caravan?
Caravan and Hurley wanted to kill him. He shot a three when they were trying to chew the clock out early in the shot clock, and I thought Hurley was just going to – I mean, Hurley did go on the floor at one point and coach his guy on the floor. I thought he was just going to go and drag his ass off the floor by his jersey when he shot that ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, So, I mean, it's just you couldn't draw up anything better for Hurley. And, you know, obviously he doesn't have the long-term history that some of these other coaches that have multiple national titles. But, you know, I'm putting him up there as one of the best, if not the best coach in college basketball right now.
Right now, I don't think you can. I don't think you can put anybody else.
I mean, he's been there for what, Sean, 6 years? Going on 7, he has 2 national championships?
Yeah, this was his 6th year, and he's won 2 national championships, obviously, in a row. And, you know, it's crazy. You look at a guy like Boeheim, who had so much success. He has more national championships than him.
Can we take a moment to realize how big a praise that is when William would literally – he would probably kill somebody for Bill Self before he would kill somebody for me.
Not Bill Self. Maybe – like, actually, I can't even say because I'm so disgusted with the Cowboys. But I would probably agree with, you know, Bill Self because I obviously love Bill Self. You know, he has 2 national
But that's how much
too.
Praise you're giving Hurley that you said that he's the best coach.
I mean,
right
also,
now.
He's done it in 6 years. Bill Self got 2 national championships in 21 years. Granted, he has the longer longevity of the success winning the Big 12 tournament 14 straight times or 13 straight times, whatever you want to call it, in one of the best conferences in college basketball. But, you know, that leads me to another thing. If, Sean, you've had anything else on the game, but that, you know, the point that, you know, did the Big East just vindicate themselves in this tournament?
Well, that's what I put in the notes, and I really did want to get your guys' thoughts on it because, you know, one thing that we didn't touch on the pod is the fact that Seton Hall won the NIT. And you can say the NIT is a consolation prize and certain teams didn't even choose to enter themselves into that tournament. But you did get Indiana State, who was a really good team, and Shaheen Holloway and Seton Hall beat them in the final. So, yeah, only 3 Big East teams got into the NCAAs, which obviously, as we talked about ad nauseum, was a complete and utter joke. But the Big East has 4 national champions in the last 8 years, 2 of which were at Villanova with Jay Wright and 2 now with UConn. And I think the Big East – I'm so tired of hearing about Big Ten this, Big Ten that. You know, Hurley even intimated at it when that Illinois staffer said that UConn's not used to what Illinois faces in the Big Ten. Are you fucking kidding me? Like,
which is such a Big East guy.
One of the most physically imposing conferences. And yeah, some of the teams were a little bit down, but I'm sorry, Rick Pitino and St. John's, that's a dogfight every time. You obviously have Creighton and Marquette who were
top 3.
You have
Seton Hall, you have Providence.
But you got Seton Hall and Providence. I mean, even Xavier and Butler.
And even Butler,
yeah.
But also, like, so, you look at it, the Big East, for what you said, Sean, 4 national championships. I would say, I'm just going to say, what, this decade? The Big Ten hasn't won since 2000.
I know.
2000.
I think the Big East, I mean, obviously, Sean, to answer your question, in my eyes, the Big East has always been respected because my team's in the Big East. But I think the Big East is right now is a lot like UConn, where they just it doesn't get the respect it deserves from the country. And I'm hoping with this UConn win, both UConn and the Big East will get the respect that they deserve.
Well, yeah, you hope that by UConn asserting this dominance against out-of-conference opponents, right? Like, they're 21-0 in their last 21 neutral site games against non-Big East opponents.
And
like,
murdering them. I'd love to know what their average margin is.
Yeah, like, they kick the living shit out of non-Big East teams. And yeah, this was a year where they went on a really good run, and obviously they had those wins against Marquette where they embarrassed them, and Creighton and teams of that nature where you're like, wow, I can't believe they're doing this to this good of a team. But you mentioned it earlier, Tom, and you got to give your Red Storm a lot of credit. They were probably the team that consistently played UConn the hardest all year. All 3 of those games were tough, and they were significantly undermanned by what UConn had. And you know Slick Rick is building that program back up. The conference deserves so much more than what's being talked about. And I felt like that kind of was the case when Villanova was killing it in the late teens, right? Like, that was a team, particularly the 2018 team with Brunson, Bridges, and DiVincenzo. Like, they were steamrolling teams in the Big East. And then they were also steamrolling teams outside of the Big East that I don't think until you got to about the Final Four where people started realizing, like, holy shit, this team
is
really
good.
Well,
yeah, they beat my Kansas Jayhawks by, like, 23 points in the Final Four.
Right.
Yep.
So, I mean, to me, guys, I don't even think it's a debate, but I'm interested to see now with Seton Hall's level of success this year and what UConn's done to other teams, Is the Big East back up there? Like, Tom, on this pod, Will and I talked about it a lot. It was the Big 12 and the Big East as far as we were concerned.
Yeah,
we thought as the best conferences.
After watching, obviously, a lot more college basketball and still being able to follow it and chat with you guys throughout the season, I mean, yeah, I think it's not even close. It's the Big 12 and the Big East, and then the SEC follows a little bit down, and then you got your ACC. I would put the ACC ahead of the fucking Big 10, to be honest with you. And then
I'd put the Mountain West above the Big 10.
Agreed, and that's not even hyperbole. Like, that's just a fact.
Yeah, I mean, I do have a question for you boys. Like, since we've all been alive, is this the most dominant college basketball team we've ever seen?
Well, yeah, and that that's just another way of asking, you know, to rank this team in the modern era. And since we've been alive, I think constitutes longer than the modern era. So, Will, you just had to go ahead and make the fucking question harder. So, thanks for that. Now I got to think harder. Yep. What do you think? Maybe the 04 UConn team?
No, I mean, if you want to go far, I think the 99 team was even better than the 04 team. Mm. But I mean, you look, one team that's not going to get considered because they didn't win at all, guys, was that 2015 Kentucky team.
The team that was undefeated and lost to Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Yeah, that team was loaded. But I mean,
but
you've got to put one of those.
They didn't win. If you don't win, who cares?
Right. Exactly. No, I was just putting them off as an aside. But
I can't
think
honestly, for me, it's just the eye test. And if I can't think of a team off the top of my head that could beat or put on as good of a performance as UConn this year, then no, they are, in my eyes, they are, this might be recency bias, but they are the best team of the modern era with what they just did.
That's a great way of phrasing it, Tom.
Like that's what you said, right? Like, stack all those other great teams, the Florida teams, that Kentucky team that did win it. Even going back to like those early 90s Duke teams, like, if you stack any of those teams, what's amazing with this UConn team is they didn't have like a Grant Hill. They didn't have an Anthony Davis. They just had a collection of super good players, and they were probably the smartest team. And
they were the smartest,
the
most well coached, and they
the
wanted
quickest,
it.
Right?
They wanted it more than everybody else too.
Yeah.
Now I want to play for
Will,
Hurley.
What do you think?
I mean, I can't see anybody better than UConn. Obviously, I want to give my boys some credit. That 2008 Kansas team that beat Memphis and Derrick Rose, also one of Tom's favorites, Chris Douglas Roberts. But
I thought he was going to be a 20 points per game guy in the league. I was wrong.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at that Kansas team, like minus Mario Chalmers, who was not a journeyman in the NBA, but like a solid piece to a team that had three superstars. Like that team, Sharon Collins didn't make in the NBA. You know, yeah, Jeff Withey didn't make in the NBA.
No, I agree. I agree with all your points, but. But this UConn team would fucking smoke.
Unbelievable. Yes, 100%. Yes.
And I think that the real test with it is, to use Tom's barometer, which I think is a perfect one, is they needed a miracle shot by Mario Chalmers to force overtime and eventually win that national championship, which, not taking anything away, that's amazing. UConn didn't UConn didn't beat anybody by less than 13 points.
I know. Absolutely crazy. And, that's the thing. And also, all right, Tom, a little easy there. We were down 9 with a minute left, and we came back and pushed.
No, listen, but again, like, this UConn team wasn't down.
But that's the question, is the best team of the modern era. I cannot think of anyone that could top the run that UConn went on this entire season.
They trailed for a total of 6 minutes and 22 seconds in this tournament.
So is it still, to like with the last two tournaments, is the only team beating them in halftime Iona?
Iona and St. Mary's. No, I'm sorry. Iona was at the half, but they did trail St. Mary's pretty much the entire first half. Yeah.
Gotcha.
But still, I mean, to get technical, they did have the lead at the end of the half on St. Mary's, so it really is Iona, right?
It is Iona. Yep.
That's crazy. Incredible.
I mean, some of these going back to, I mean, just this year, right, their total margin of victory was 140 on the dot. That's an all-time record. That passed a UCLA Wooden team. That actually was the only one ahead of the 2023 UConn total margin of victory, which was 121. So they have two of the top three of all time. Their tournament average margin of victory in this tournament was 23.3. Like I said, they trailed for a total of 6 minutes and 22 seconds. They've won 12 consecutive NCAA tournaments going back to the Iona game to begin the 2023 tournament. None of them they won by less than 13 points, and that was the final four game to Miami. All others have been by at least 15. I mean, we're watching a run, guys, that – and I kept saying it on the pod, and I know Will was kind of just, like, laughing at me, but this isn't supposed to happen in today's college basketball. It's really not.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing to say about it besides the words that Sean loves. It's special. It's beyond special of what UConn did. And I would say, you know, even going back to last year, especially this tournament where they just dominated everybody that they played. Like you said, you shouldn't go on a 30-0 run in, what, the Elite Eight?
Right.
Like, that shouldn't happen, especially against a team that's ranked in the country.
They were a 3 seed.
Yeah, it wasn't like you were playing 11 seed there in the Elite Eight. You're playing a 3 seed who were the ranked team, one of the best Big Ten teams, and you went on a 30-0 run. It wasn't like you were playing Stetson, which you probably went on a 30-0 run against that team too. But still, it's just that does not happen in this year, these years of college basketball. You know, when you see 16 seeds beat 1 seeds and, 11 seeds go into the Final Four, you don't see teams as dominant as this UConn team.
You know, I saw two other stats that just made my head spin in relation to the national championship game. So obviously, Edie at 37-10, which is phenomenal. Purdue shot 1 of 7 from three. They had 330 consecutive games of shooting 8 or more 3s. And they also shot over 40% from the 3-point field goal this year. Both of those streaks were obviously snapped, including the 330 consecutive games. Only shoot 7 threes, especially when the majority of the second half you're losing and need to shoot them and you literally can't get the shots off, is just – that's wild shit.
Yeah, and like, you know, even Tom said it. When you're basically starting your offense with 15 seconds left at the logo, what are you supposed to do?
Yeah, I mean, it's – listen, after this pod, we're putting the suck fest away, okay? We've sucked enough. But yeah, UConn, it's just – I don't have words to describe this. It's unbelievable. But, I mean, I got to pat myself on the back. Well, I predicted it.
You did.
That was so great.
You did. I mean, I don't care what the spread is, he says. And I'm like, you know what, that's probably a smart bet.
Yeah, and those two hit pretty easily. Those were like the two that I did not have to worry about. Of course, Picksball still isn't done for us until next Sunday because I made that stupid Phil bet. All right, let's talk about the tournament in general. Sean, you have us here rating it on a scale of 1 to 10. For me personally, I'm going to put the UConn run to the side just because they were incredible, and they're probably one of the best teams I've ever seen, best team of the modern era in my eyes, all that good shit. The tournament, aside from that, had some moments, but I would give this tournament like maybe a 4.5 to a 5.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing as you, Tom. I would say, like, if you're doing it on a grade scale, I would be like C-.
Yeah, if you're a UConn fan, you love those 30-point blowouts, but everybody else, it's like, can I see a game, please?
I mean, like, also, you look at it, too. You know, obviously the NC State story was great. You know, Grand Canyon winning their first ever NCAA tournament game. Great story as well. You had the Oakland story beating 3 NBA lottery players. Those were the stories. But, like, besides that, like, if you're not a UConn fan.
And those stories all happened super early on outside of NC State, too.
Absolutely. And, like, if you're not a UConn fan, like, I'm watching the national championship game last night. And I even said, I'm like, this is a 16-point game with 4 minutes left. Like, everybody, if you're not a UConn fan or a Purdue fan thinking you have a chance to come back, you're probably turning it off because it's 11:30 at night.
So I have the UConn fan perspective, and I still think the tournament sucked. I would put it at about a 4.
Yeah.
Because even though it was amazing and the level of dominance that we waxed poetic about it was there, if you're not invested in that team, this tournament was an absolute bore. There were so many blowouts. It was so chalky.
If I wasn't gambling, there's a lot of games that I would have turned off a couple minutes into.
There were not a lot of compelling stories, and even the Kentucky one, you know, that would have been, I think, a bigger story a couple years ago. this Kentucky team, I don't think gave anybody the real thought of this is a wagon. And you just, yeah, did people pick them in the, to go to the Final Four? Sure. Did they have a really nice year? Sure. But they don't have the shine and the whole reputation that they had in years past, because we've seen them get picked off early a couple times lately. So it was a great story for Oakland and for Golkey, but overall, I mean, yeah, this Yale's win I thought was awesome too. But Tom, like you said, that was so early in the tournament. That was like the first 2 days.
Yeah,
everything
else
from
then
on really was bad.
Yeah, it's just you know, one of those things. And like there's, you know, I love the, you know, the March Madness, but especially the first four, you know, games of the first, the two, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Like those games are supposed to be electric, and you know, you sit on the couch all day and you watch college basketball for four straight days. But there were so many games that I'm like, oh, you know, my Sabres are terrible. I'm going to watch them instead of this college basketball game, because it's, you know, 47-12 at halftime. I'm like, what is this?
Yeah,
and I think the other thing that you got too was you saw that the product overall, and that's why the women's got such a higher rating than the men's, is the quality of competition just wasn't really that great.
I think
like,
the coaching
the really good.
I think the coaching in the NCAA, I think it's just become all fucking recruiting and transfer portal. And outside of a few guys, I'll give Nate Oates credit. I think he coaches the entire game, and he does an incredible job. And I actually think he got a lot more out of that team than the talent level after watching them. Obviously, Hurley. But outside of that, like, I really can't name Bill Self as, you know, I'll give you Bill Self just because he's done it for so long.
Kansas wasn't whole. They were hurt.
I'm saying, like, just coaching in general, outside of recruiting and all the other stuff that doesn't happen on the court, is just pure garbage in the NCAA now. Like, I feel like I'm watching, like, a bad pickup basketball game half the time.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, we talk about, you know, we had the hot take about Cal not being a good coach and all that stuff, which, you know, you watch
that
their
hot,
offense.
I don't think.
I mean, you watch their offense. It's like watching a men's league game. Like, it's dribble, dribble, dribble. Let me try to get open. And if there's a guy open in the wing, not if I'm going to take a contested fadeaway three. Like, that's their offense.
That's a lot of college basketball, though. It's like, oh, let's just get the players in here and they'll take care of the rest. But this isn't the fucking NBA.
And, you know, Houston also, you know, Shed goes down. He gets hurt. And
I know.
They
the
lose
thing
their
that's
chance
of
going
us.
Far. Right? And then you have Duke was Fugazi all year. And they turned it on into the tournament. But still, I mean, they ended up getting blown out by NC State. So it's like, how good were they really? And I just thought it was super chalky and not that exhilarating. I mean, and you're to the point, again, no matter how great UConn is, this should not be a tournament that they should be winning by 15, 20 points against very good competition from the season. Like, that just shouldn't be happening. And you shouldn't have these other teams like a Purdue who they play their style of basketball and it's, you know, Big Ten kind of slow and let Edie cook. But they even were not. They probably were not the second best team in the country in a lot of other years.
Houston.
But in this season, they were.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. And, like, as a Kansas fan, like, even if we were full strength going into this tournament, I'm like, if we meet the Sweet 16, like, that's all we're doing. Because, you know, Kansas, all year watching Kansas this year, I'm like, this is the worst team that Bill Self has, and they're ranked 14th in the country. Like, it's not the Kansas teams that I'm used to, and obviously I've been spoiled my whole life as a Kansas fan. But, you know, I'm going to the tournament as a fan being like, I'm picking them to lose in the second round in every bracket that I have. So it's just like, why am I getting up for this team when I know they're going to lose? You know, you see UConn, and like, I can understand that if some UConn fans were saying like, yep, we're going back to back. Like, if you look at their whole season and you look at their Big East tournament, knowing that your toughest game you played was St. John's in the semis, and then you go into the tournament and you're beating everybody by 13 plus points. Like, obviously you got to think to yourself, yep, we're just going to win another. And I can guarantee you that, I would say, what, Tom, 65 to 75% of UConn fans are like, we're going back-to-back week one of the NCAA tournament?
Oh, that's a low number, too. You're being friendly.
I am being friendly. I didn't want to say 85 because that's probably what it is.
And that's okay for the true fans like Sean and whatnot, but here come the bandwagons. And I told Mikhail yesterday walking around town, I'm in a tough spot because I don't know who to spit in their direction or who to give the head nod to being in the New England area, because I don't know who's a real fan and who's just a fucking bandwagon.
Well, yeah, it's so funny that you say that, Tom. Sorry to cut you off there, Sean.
No,
I was at the bar watching, you know, the Final Four or whatever, and I have Alabama. I took Alabama. You heard it on Picks Boss. I took Alabama, and that game was close, you know, until the last 8 minutes, I would say 9 minutes or whatever it was, until UConn just went on the run that they usually do. You know, like they hit a three to tie the game. Yeah, flip the switch. You know, they hit a three with like 9 minutes left, and I was like, oh, let's go, baby! Like, just, you know, I just want to win my bet. And this guy almost gets in my face and goes, "You're in Connecticut. Who are you rooting for?" And I was like, "I bet on Alabama. I'm not a Connecticut fan." He's like, "You live in Connecticut. How are you not a fan?" And I go,
"See, that's dumb."
It's
a man after my heart.
Tom, yeah, but like, this is what Tom says too about the whole bandwagon thing. I asked the guy where Hurley coached before UConn. He had no idea.
Yeah.
Of course not. And like, I think that's where you're starting to get here, guys. Like, and I know, Will, you and I have talked about it.
This is what you get,
year,
though, bro. This is the negative part that comes with the blue blood.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm trying to lead us there right now. Last year, they were still a four seed that won. And they hadn't won in 10 in previous 9 years. So you're thinking it's still one of those UConn teams where, oh, it's cute that they did it. But there's – and, yes, I guess we have to call them a blue blood because at that point they had 5 national championships. But they didn't have the sustained level of dominance. You had some gap years, and they were still a four seed. This was not a team that was steamrolling everybody. But this year it was. And they were the hunted, not the huntee. And you got Hurley, who pisses a lot of other fan bases off with his antics. We love him as fans, but a lot of people hate him. You had Cam Spencer, who if he was on any other team, I mean, could you imagine Cam Spencer at Duke? He'd be the most hated player in college basketball.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of things that UConn is right now, as they have kind of turned into this monster that everybody else, Rick Pitino said it, like, Connecticut's the team in the Big East that we're trying to get to. UConn's never really been looked like that, even in their best years, because this level of success has only happened since 1999. Yes, they were really good in the – even dating back to the early 90s, but they weren't winning championships. They don't have that pedigree. But now they do, and they're the new kid on the block who's going up to everybody else, including the bluest of bloods, and saying, not only are we better than you, but we're going to fucking knock you down and rub your face in it and show you how much better we are. And a lot of fan bases hate that.
And it's so funny that you said that, Sean. And like, I listen to, you know, DiPietro and Rothenberg in the morning, you know, just because I want to hear them bash on the Mets. And, you know, when the Jets and the Giants are bad, it's funny for me to listen to. But like, they literally said, both of them, they both agreed. He goes, if Hurley's coaching my team, I'm going to war for that guy. If I'm the coach facing Hurley, I despise that guy. I can't stand him. Like, it's just, you know, it's one of those things. It's just, you know, that's how you get under people's skin. And even other coaches, that's how you get under their skin. And even if I'm I'm a 17-year-old high school student right now, and I'm, you know, recruited highly, like, who am I going to go play for? Am I going to go play for John Calipari and maybe he gets me to the NBA? Or am I going to go try to win a national championship and play for a guy that I want to run through a wall for?
And what makes people hate you as a team, not only when you win, but when you brag about how easy it is? I mean, Hurley even said a couple of times, like, we won again, by a lot again. And he's making comments like that. He's like, we're making a very hard tournament look easy. These are comments that, again, if you're a fan, like, you're just loving it. But if you're anybody else, right, this fucking prick, man. And it's, again, not just the fact that they're winning. They're killing their opponents. They're making other teams and other good programs look like they don't belong on the floor. And that's what those old Duke teams did. That's what Kansas has done a few times. That's what Carolina's done a few times. So I think they're becoming a very hateable team, and and UConn, for the state of Connecticut, that's not a big one. I think that there's a lot of people who look at the Northeast as pretentious as shit anyway. Like, talking to some people even down here in Texas, guys, who don't know the Northeast, don't really – and I know New York has its own personality and Connecticut has its own, and it's very regional, but there's a sense up that from down here that all it is up there is just pretentious assholes that just want to tell you how much better they are at the thing that they're doing than you are. And yeah. UConn is starting to embody that, and I don't think you can question or doubt that.
Did you guys see this quote from Hurley?
Which one?
Do you want me to read it to you?
Yeah.
It says, I'm the best there is, plain and simple. I mean, I wake up in the morning, I piss excellence, and nobody can hang with my stuff. You know I'm just a big, hairy American winning machine. Ricky Bobby slash Dan Hurley.
Yeah, that's like the
Michael Scott, Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, you know, Sean, you say, you hear all the quotes that Hurley says or whatever, but at the same time, he also gives credit to the other team. I don't know if you saw the clip of him walking after the Final Four when he played Alabama, and he said literally six times, that was a very good team.
Yeah. No, he gives them credit for sure, but he also goes out of his way to prop up his team and say how much better they are.
Well, we love that because more than anything in the world, if I'm on the sideline and my coach looks at like Zach Edey like he did, and he's like, fuck that guy. I'm like, yeah, fuck that guy. Like, let's fucking go.
He goes after everybody. He goes after absolutely everybody. And what he probably was as a coach at Wagner and URI, and even his first few years at UConn, he's able to validate all of that now because of the winning. And he's just turned it up a notch, I think.
Yeah, no. I mean, all right. Let's go over some super way too early predictions for next season. I'll go first again, just so I can get it out of the way. UConn's going to win again.
I can't see them going back.
No,
back,
I'm
back,
only
back,
kidding.
Back. I mean, they're tied with Duke right now as favorites to win it all. You know, I saw the odds this morning. They're,
I mean, you know the recruits are going to be like fucking pouring in.
Yeah, 100%. But also, what I've read too is obviously Duke's getting Cooper Flagg. You know, Duke's going to be better than they were last year. And also, I got to give some props to my boys. You know, you got the number two guy in the portal already, the kid from North Dakota State. You have the kid from Florida that's coming in. You know, if you get Dickinson back again for his last year of eligibility and Furphy stays, you're looking at a very good Kansas team, a team that's 10 times better than they were this year, a team that beat a UConn, a team that beat a Houston in a season that is a down season for me. I put them up there too. But, I mean, like right now, is there a bigger target on the back of UConn right now? I think everybody in the world is going to want to kill them.
Oh, for sure. I don't have UConn winning at all next year. It'll be interesting to see if Caravan comes back. You know, Samson Johnson will be back. Diarra will be back. And then they also have Solomon Ball and Jalen Stewart, who didn't get a lot of run this year, who were part of that huge incoming class. They have a four-star guard coming in, and you know that Hurley's going to work that portal. So you know UConn will be in the conversation, but it's almost three in a row. I mean, that hasn't been done since the Wooden years. I would put Kansas in that conversation. You know, just from a talent perspective, Duke's going to be great. I'm very interested to see what happens in the SEC with Tennessee, Arkansas, now that Cal's there, Kentucky, who they bring in, Florida, if they get a little bit better. And the Big Ten, like, what does Purdue do, right? And is Michigan finally going to get their shit together? You've got the Big Ten now that has USC and UCLA. It's going to be interesting for me, for sure. But I think the short list is UConn, Duke, Kansas, and also Houston, because I think Shedd is coming back, and that would be a huge deal for them.
I mean, we'll see. Obviously, it's way too early to tell. And, I still look at the college football rankings, too, to see where my Jayhawks are as well, and it's still too early, but you know, they're projected to be a top 10, top 15 team, which I'm pumped about, but like, it's all too early stuff. And you can say, you know, oh, plus 600 to win the national championship again, maybe easy money. Like, you could say that all you want, but like, when it comes to the tournament, you know, minus this year where UConn just dominated everybody, you know, you see Kansas lose to Gonzaga by 30, you see a Grand Canyon win. So you never know when it comes to the tournament, anybody can win. NC State goes on a run to get the Final Four when they weren't even going to make the tournament unless they won the ACC. So it's one of those things that, like, you know, you could be projected preseason number one. That doesn't mean you're going to finish number one at the end of the year.
It never does.
It never does. So it's going to be crazy to see. And, you know, wait, guys, I have a hot take alert.
Here we go.
All right. You're going to call it a hot take?
I can tell you right now, this has nothing to do with, I mean, a little bit to do about college basketball, but more about my boys in general. I swear to God, if Jerry Jones paid more money than he did in free agency to Calipari to Arkansas, I'm going to lose my shit.
Oh, my God. That is such a good point. I didn't even think of that. That's going to be hilarious. I've never rooted so hard for something in my life.
Like, if he's like, oh, here's, you know, here's $20 million to get Calipari to coach Arkansas, and you signed a long snapper and a 31-year-old linebacker, but you're giving $30 million to Arkansas to get John Calipari. Oh my God! Like, I'm looking at jail time right now.
How long?
Tom, I didn't know we were getting this. I didn't even put those two things together.
No, that was beautiful.
I thought about it all day yesterday and all day today, and I just had to say it because I was like, I can't wait to get on the pod, and I'm going to have a hot take alert. And
Did you think about it while you were performing surgery? You know, did you listen to the pod yesterday?
I did listen to the pod.
And I told everybody that you're a doctor.
Oh, thanks, man. Oh, yeah, I did hear that. You did call me a doctor. Yeah,
you're a tape doctor.
I am a doctor. I'm an orthopedic surgeon, yes. I thought about it all day today. Like, I saw Jerry Jones pop up on my feed on Instagram or Twitter, and I'm like, yeah, he definitely gave Arkansas $30 million for Calipari. Yeah, he definitely did. I'm thinking about it. So maybe Calipari can come coach the Cowboys. You know, I'm going to say no.
I don't know if he could do a worse job than fucking McCarthy.
That's very true. But you know what? Let's bring him back again for another year. Let's do it. Sorry, this got into football, but I just had to give you guys one of my
hot takes. Anytime you can bring up your Cowboys and you sense the vitriol that you have for your favorite team, it really is amazing.
It's just like obviously you guys see what they do in the draft, and which is in 2 weeks from now. But if they don't draft well, like, I'm not excited to go next season with the worst team than what you just had, in my opinion. And then expecting to win, definition of insanity, anybody?
The Dallas Cowboys?
Yeah, their picture shows up right next to it. This isn't the first time.
Yeah, so...
Hey,
question
for you. Who gets the Kentucky job? Like, if you were to say one name right now, who goes to Kentucky?
I mean, there's so many names thrown out, and I've seen the bullshit, but, like, obviously I think he loves where he is at St. John's, but, like, bringing Ricky P back because he'd leave on bad notes, but also Ricky P's in his mid-70s. I don't think he wants to start all over again the same place, but also at the same time, he said that Iona was his forever job at one point. He's like, I'm happy.
Oh, I don't believe a word out of Slick Rick's mouth ever.
Exactly. So, but also I can't see Pitino going back at 75 years old to get Kentucky another national championship in the next 3 years. I just can't see it. I mean, besides that, you know, obviously Bill Self's not leaving. I don't think Izzo leaves. I can't see also Kentucky signing like one of these mid-major schools that were good, like a Grand Canyon, to sign this guy to go to Kentucky. It's going to have to be one of these big guys. The only one that maybe makes sense to me is the AP Coach of the Year, Kelvin Sampson.
Wow.
That's the only one that makes – that's the only one that I can see going there because, you know, he made – Houston a top three team in the last 2 years, and that program's been thriving down there in Texas. So why couldn't he bring that to, you know, he did a great job at Indiana, he did a great job at Houston. What doesn't say that he doesn't do a great job at Kentucky? Because also at the same time, he's not going to fool around with these guys that are one and done. Like, if you're not going to play as a team, you're not going to play for him.
What about Scott Drew with Baylor?
That's a good thing, but I think Scott Drew has a great thing going at Baylor. He's won a national championship there. He gets very good recruits, very athletic players. I can't see him leaving. I think he's kind of built like a dynasty there, and when I mean dynasty, it's like a team that's always in the top 10 and always in the top 3 of the Big 12, which is obviously, as we talked about, one of the best conferences in college basketball. And won a national championship, what, 5 years ago in 19?
No, 2021.
2021, so 3 years ago, he's 3 years removed from winning a national championship game. And you looked at Baylor this season, that they had moments where they looked like the best team in the country, minus UConn. So, I mean, I can't see him leaving either. Also, you know, as Tom said too, money talks. So if somebody's offered, you know, $10, $11 million to go coach Kentucky, even $7 million, you know, the only other one.
Are you throwing your hat in the ring?
I mean, I'm a better game plan manager than Calipari. Let's play men's league basketball. Like, that's great. But the only one I could, like, and this is like maybe on the verge of hot take because he just went to where he went, is Ed Cooley.
What's your logic
Ed
there?
Cooley made he made a dynasty with a small school in Providence. When I mean dynasty, that team was always ranked when he was there. You know, they got to the Final Four with him, like a team like Providence gets to the Final Four. He's had
Final Four?
Did they go to the Final Four with the big man who played in the NBA for the Celtics. I can forget his name. Didn't they go to the Final Four?
Big man.
Or maybe I don't think they definitely didn't go to a Final Four with Cooley.
Oh, maybe it was the Elite Eight, but they had a team that was like a five seed or whatever, and they made a run. But also, what I'm saying is Cooley has made wherever he goes. I mean, obviously Georgetown's the bigger name than Providence, but if you look at his season this year, I mean, who's getting the recruits in the Big East this year? It's going to be Hurley one. I would say, to be honest with you, it's probably Rick Pitino two, and then what, McDermott three, and then Shaka Smart four. Like, you're gonna, if you're Ed Cooley,
Tahir Holloway does well.
Yeah, exactly. You're gonna get those recruits over those guys at Georgetown when Georgetown's been atrocious for the last 20 years.
Kim English signed a 6-year deal to stay at Providence.
Missouri legend. But
so
yeah,
like,
I mean,
yeah. Are you also, the Kentucky job is so important. Like, you kind of have to have a kinship with a university. That's why, even though I would never be surprised if Kentucky offers Hurley $11 million and says here, like, if he takes that, I can't even be mad. But
yeah, I mean,
you have Hurley and UConn just as a perfect match, right? Like, I think Rick Pitino is the only Northeast guy, New York guy, to go down to Lexington and do a great job. But that was back in the early 90s. Like, yeah. That's not now. And you really do need the personality fit. And even though Calipari won, you know, and had a lot of success there, not as much as the fan base wanted, particularly not lately. But Calipari is not really a Kentucky guy either. He's relatively nomadic, but he's from New York. Like, I feel like they kind of need a guy that fits their image, particularly while they're down right now.
Yeah, 100%. So it's going to be somebody that takes – I mean, it's got to be somebody that's been in partnership with Kentucky, all that stuff. I mean, outside of the names I said, like, obviously I think Kelvin Sampson's a great hire there for what he's done at the programs that he's been at. Ed Cooley's that reach there. You know, he gets guys to come to Providence and make Providence a ranked team, like I just said. But – at the same time, you're not going to bring Ricky P back. You know, he's mid-70s. I don't see Bill Self leaving Kansas. I don't see Scott – to be honest, we don't see Scott Drew leaving Baylor. I mean, but also me and Sean talked about this on another podcast. Fans of Kentucky, like diehard Kentucky basketball fans, don't care about the one-and-dones. They care about winning a national championship. They don't care about how their guys do in the NBA. They care about winning.
Which is so funny that Cal is like, you know, he cares much more about being in the NBA green room than he does standing on a national championship podium. It's so funny that that's the school that got stuck with him. Well, not really. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, you saw, like, the differences. And, like, I obviously I'm going to have to wax poetically on a team that sucked. But, like, you saw the difference, how pissed Bill Self was getting blown out by Gonzaga, even though they were missing one of the best players in the country. Cal lost to Oakland, and he's laughing on the sidelines. Like, he was laughing going back to the locker room. Like, he doesn't care because he knows that he has 3 lottery picks this year.
And also $36 million owed to him if they wanted to fire.
Yep. So, I mean, just, you know, hats off to Jerry Jones for getting him to Arkansas. But
anything else,
that,
gentlemen?
Oh, I mean, we got to, you know, me and Tom have a cousin. So we got to talk about it a little bit. The Lady Gamecocks. 38-0, winning the national championship, beating the Fighting Caitlin Clarks. Camila Cardoza, what a stud. What an absolute stud. She double-doubled. There was no answer for her down low. The craziest stat for me was, and I watched this whole game, South Carolina had 37 bench points. Iowa had 0.
Yeah.
How are you supposed to win a game when your bench does not score? And also, you know, we talk about all Caitlin Clark and all she does, you know, the female Steph Curry, whatever. She took so many bad contested threes. I know that's what she does all year, but against a team against South Carolina that can score from you inside, outside, whatever they want to do, that's not going to work. Like, yeah, she scored 30 points, but she shot the ball 27 times. Like, yeah, I mean, the other guard on Iowa as well had a great day to, you know, me and Sean talked about it, like, Iowa needs somebody else, and there was somebody else, but Caitlin Clark was just, in my opinion, shut down because, yeah, you scored 30 points, but you needed 27 shots to score 30 points. That's not really that impressive in my mind. But South Carolina dominated that game from start to finish. They got it up to 16, and then Iowa went on a 9-0 run to make it close, but then it was back up to 14, and, you know, after that, it was just over. And South Carolina has won 3 national championships in the last, what, 6 years?
Yeah, and Tom said it perfectly before, right? Like, the two teams that won were by far the best teams, and they beat the best player in the game, which was actually on the other team. So.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, that's the thing with Caitlin Clark. Like, obviously, she has so many options out there. And obviously, Ice Cube paid her $5 million to go to play this 3-3 league.
Offered her $5
million. I don't think she took it yet.
I don't think she took it. Also, Portnoy offered her $10 million to play in the Barstool Rec League.
I think that was an empty offer, knowing she wasn't going to take it.
I think it was an empty offer as well. But I'm just saying, you know, if you're going to make, I would say, what, $2 million more than you do in the WNBA, play 3-on-3 with Ice Cube, why wouldn't you take it?
Well, she'll make so much off with
endorsements and, you know, whatnot. She's going to be the face of the NBA in 3 years. But, you know, that's how it is. But also, like, how many – it's crazy, though, and I think Tom brought it up. More people watch the women's national championship than the men's. When's the last time we could have ever said that? And Sean said that. Sorry, Sean. But when's the last time we could have ever said that? Like, the women's game is just evolving more and more each year. You know, with these people, these girls that are not just shooting layups, they're shooting from, you know, logo shots like you see in men's college basketball and men's NBA. You know, you see Stephen Curry, the female version now going to be playing in the WNBA.
I can tell you right now, the Iowa-South Carolina game averaged 18.7 million viewers. The men's averaged 12.5.
It's not even close. It's just but also, I want to know how many viewers turned that game off when it was a 16-point game with 5 minutes left.
Yeah, but I'm sure there are a lot of people that are still like, okay, well, the game's over, but Caitlin Clark might still do something amazing. And I get exactly. Dawn, and Tom yeah, and I 100%. Talked about it, like, Dawn Staley, that was so awesome of her to give Caitlin Clark her props, because this went beyond just the game. And you can criticize that she's inefficient and all that. The WNBA or the women's college game right now is the best point that it's ever been, because even when you had UConn and Tennessee, it was really only two teams.
Yeah, I mean, you could throw in Stanford, coaches, too, but that was it.
Yeah, the coaches, the parity, the legacies, all this stuff right now. And you have Caitlin Clark, who everybody knows who she is. That's the most important thing. And she has done things that a lot of women haven't done. And I'm not saying that means she's the best ever, because Taurasi certainly would say that, and the resume of Breonna Stewart is unmatched by anybody.
Yeah, I mean, you see these people, but, like, you know,
there's no need to tear her down, though, is what I'm saying.
Exactly, 100%. But, like, you look at the face of women's college basketball, and you had, like, the stories with her and Angel Reese. They're actually really good friends. Like, obviously, the media brought up, they hate each other and all that stuff. It's just
they have a legitimate rivalry. And
they have
a rivalry,
but they respect each other.
It's like Magic and Bird back in the day, huh?
Yeah. Great comp, Tom.
Absolutely. But you see Angel Reese put the crown on Caitlin Clark's chair because she's the queen of college basketball. And, like, you go through the names. Like, 2 years ago, it was Sabrina Ionescu for Oregon, who was shooting the same shots that Caitlin Clark was. And that's what the women's game is trending toward. You know, back in the day, like, minus Breonna Stewart and Maya Moore, maybe, like, the names you'd think about is Diana Taurasi and Candace Parker. Sue Bird, too. Yeah. Maybe Rebecca Lobo.
Cheryl Miller.
Cheryl Miller, the OG. Yeah.
I mean, Tom knows his female basketball. I love it.
Lisa Leslie.
Lisa Leslie, also first woman to dunk. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's a great comp. But, like, where the women's basketball game is headed is just miles where it was, like, 5 years ago. And it's great to see, and it's great for college sports and basketball in general, and even professional sports. More people are attending these games, like the New York Liberty and all those teams where you could buy tickets for $12 and sit in the third row. Now it's not like that anymore.
Well, the hope now is that you get the first two rounds out of the home gym of the higher seed.
Yes,
right?
Of course.
Because right now they have to do that, because you can't get a 16 and a 1 or a 15 and a 2 to that can't be worth it for a neutral site arena to even open its doors, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But hopefully in about 2 to 3 to 4 years, you do get that, because you don't have Stetson visiting stores to play UConn. You're playing in Albany or in Brooklyn or something.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, I think they're headed on that path. And also the other path they're heading on, too, is because, like, you know, you fill out a bracket, you know, in women's basketball 5 years ago, you just put all the one seeds in the final four, and then you pick two of the best one seeds to play each other, and you pick the best team in the country. Now there's upsets. There's 11s beating 6s. You never saw that 5 years ago. So I think women's basketball is probably, I would say, 3 to 5 years to seeing, like, a 16 seed upset. Because that's what's going to happen. It's going to turn more into the men's game, where on any given day, obviously you have your dominant teams like UConn, but you see teams like NC State, go to the Final Four. I could see that in women's basketball in the next 5 years. You see like a team like Kansas, who was 9, obviously I had to bring them up, but they were 9. Can you see them in like 5 years making a run to the Elite Eight? Like, I can see that in women's basketball going forward.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I mean, last thing for me is also, too, is unless a one-and-done starts happening for the WNBA, mm-hmm. these great players are around for a while. So you actually get the connectivity of knowing every year who's playing where, and you see these teams that stick together and maybe have a heartbreaking loss and have a chance to redeem themselves the next year because they are sticking together. I mean, UConn got the number one recruit in the country the other day, and Paige Beckers is coming back. So they're immediately going to be thought of as a Final Four team. What does Iowa do? You've got Kim Mulkey at LSU. You've got the juggernaut that is South Carolina and Dawn Staley. And you've got a lot of other really good teams, too. So I think that's going to be great for the game as well. When men's, it's transfer portal this and one and done's that. And there's just not really any consistency in the men's game right now, which I think is the main reason why the tournament this year was so bad, and we put them all under, we each put it under a 5 on a scale of 1 to 10, because it just wasn't very compelling. Because I think a lot of people, you're not guaranteed that Christian Laettner at Duke for 3 years and
Absolutely.
4 years. You're like, who the hell is this? I think people are still learning. I mean, shit, you're still learning your own team like 3 weeks, 4 weeks into the season now.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, the women's game is poised to make a huge leap in. And I'm pretty excited for it because, like, minus the Sabrina Ionescu years and Diana Taurasi, like, I never really watched a women's tournament. But I'm like, oh, you know, I get to see Caitlin Clark today. Turn it on. Why not?
Yeah, you know, the Brittany Griner Baylor team has won a couple times.
Yep, that too. But, like, now you're excited. Not even, like, I'm a casual. And I'm excited for it. Yeah, Candace Parker too. But, like, I'm a casual fan. Now I'm looking forward to see these games.
Yeah, that's very true. I don't think I have the bandwidth for another sport, but – I mean, if you do, more power to you.
But you can dip in and out of it now, and I think that's cool.
Of course. Me and Will were playing Call of Duty while Will was screaming at me because I'm high as a kite and I suck, and I was in the wrong building. But I was also watching the game, one of the women's games, out of the corner of my eye.
And that's important.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, those are eyeballs that, even if it was a corner of your eye, they were never getting that 2, 3, 4 years ago.
Not at all. But, boys, we got... Let's see, we can check 2 pods off. We got 5 to go. So unless you guys have anything else, let's save our voices because we got another pod coming out tomorrow.
Tomorrow, yep.
Golf right. Heavy coming up the rest of the week.
Big golf heavy, yep.
It's Masters week, everybody. Let's enjoy it. Everybody have a good night.
Later.